if you're ever like, is this an inappropriate time for the dancing chicken? Just, the answer is no.
Okay.
I could be bereaved, and still, the dancing chicken, always welcome.
And you'd be like, oh my god, it's kind of funny. I feel a bit better.
I'd like
slightly better.
Cry through the gentle smile. Hi, I'm Sophie.
Hi, I'm Mark.
And this is You Know What I Like, where we sit down each month to flail about something we're unhealthily obsessed with. You know what I like? Austin Land. Austin Land is a 2013 film directed by Jerusha Hess, based on the book of the same name released by Shannon Hale in 2007. It focuses on Jane, played by Kerry Russell, an American woman who is obsessed with Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice. She raids her life savings and splurges on a trip to England to stay at Austin Land, a resort in which Austen's era is recreated. However, it turns out to be slightly different than she dreamed. The film is a delightful rom-com romp. It stars J.J. Field as Mr. Henry Nobley and Brett McKenzie as Martin, the two potential love interests for Jane. Other cast members include the hilarious Jennifer Coolidge, the excellent Ricky Whittle, and even Gaius Baltar himself, James Callis. This episode is going to be dedicated to the film, as neither of us has read the book. First off, what do you think of the film, Mark?
Are we going that, like, broad?
We don't have to. You can cut that bit out. We normally go, what do you think?
Yeah. But, like, it's a film. Like, it's like a single film. Yeah. I see what you mean.
Yeah. So you could say, I liked it, or I didn't like it.
Okay.
And then we could, like, bounce off of that.
And then we can have a conversation.
We're just used to, like, covering something that's got, like, so many episodes or being so broad that just, like, me asking you about one thing has just, like, thrown the whole podcast.
Wait, so you want to know what I know about a film?
I want to know what you think about one thing, yes.
Do you mean the franchise? I'm very confused.
I've whittled us down just to the one. We're not even talking about book-to-film comparisons.
That's very true, okay. Okay. I'm going to be honest and say that when you said to me, like, watch this film, and then, like, I watched a trailer, I was like, oh, God, this looks awful. I don't want to watch this.
Can I just say, if this is the moment where you go, and I was right, then this podcast is off to a very bad start.
And when, like, I watched it last night, like, I kept, like, putting it off and putting it off. And then, like, Ben was like, Mark, just sit down and watch the goddamn film. And I was like, fine. And it did surprise me. Like, we'll go into the why as we go into it.
Okay.
But, like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And, like, I know that's, like, high praise. But, like, I expected it to be, like, not bad, but just, like, bland.
Yeah.
And, like, I was surprised.
Okay. Yeah. You've still not actively said, it was okay.
Because it's, like it's very, like, in the middle for me. Like, I can see parts of it that you would like.
Yeah, before we, like, fully dive into this episode, I should say that this episode was originally planned to be one of my mini-topics for our compilation anniversary episode, and we sort of talked so much that we thought, maybe save this for a full episode. So, like, I feel like I should preface this with, like, this is not my ultimate film of quality filmmaking, but it really makes me laugh.
I feel like we've started this, like, I'm on the wrong note.
I know. Well, now I feel all insecure.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I have to defend the film, but also be like, yeah, okay.
Okay. Why did you choose this film then, Sophie?
Because, first of all, I think I have, like, this relationship with rom-coms where every now and then, I just really like to watch a rom-com, but I am frequently disappointed in the rom-coms I actually watch.
Okay.
Because, like, all I want is, like, a relationship that is not completely unhealthy, that maybe has something slightly more interesting going for it than what I'm sometimes given. And I just feel frequently, like, and I don't want to sound really, like, snobby, I just feel like a lot of the time, like, rom-coms never fulfill my expectations, and I find that really disappointing. Whereas this is a rom-com which has, like, enough character that I'm like, ooh, a bit different. I actually kind of like the people who are in it, which is not something you can always say for rom-coms.
As people or the characters?
Like the characters okay. in it, sorry. It does also have a lot of actors that I really like in it.
Okay.
And, like, there are certain types of comedy in this, which are just the types of comedy that always really tickle me.
Okay.
And it just gets me laughing. Like, one thing I find really funny is, like, people doing accents that, not like, oh, I'm gonna be a person from this place, but yeah. like sometimes when people do voices and accents that are a bit weird, I find it really funny.
Okay.
And there's like a certain aspect of physical comedy occasionally in this, again, which I just find really funny.
Do you have any like main examples?
Yes. Georgia King, who plays Lady Amelia Hartwright, like, I find her really funny because she does this thing where she doesn't walk. It's almost like she's sort of galloping places.
Okay.
And it's like this really like gentle gallop that she always does.
Yeah.
And I just find it just to watch her physically move in the film.
Okay.
I just find it really funny.
Is she the main lady who owns the house? Like, who owns Austin Land?
She's the young blonde one.
Okay.
Yeah, so if for anyone listening who has not watched the film but is still listening to this podcast...
Bravo, first.
Yes, yeah. Committed. Appreciate it. When Jane goes to Austin Land, there are two other people who are with her for the experience package. One of them she meets at the airport, which is Jennifer Coolidge's character, called Miss Elizabeth Charming, because they all get to adopt pseudonyms whilst they're there. And then the other one is Lady Amelia Hartwright, who is like a young... She's a veteran of Austin Land. She knows how she's supposed to behave and what she's supposed to do and that sort of thing. And she's very doted upon by the woman who runs it.
Yeah.
And I just find both of those characters really funny in their own ways. They just get me.
I was very confused by the small blonde one. Like, because for ages, like, I couldn't work out if she was like an actress at the place or not, because she never like wrote character or anything.
What's implied in the film is that she goes there like every year, that she's like a veteran of it, which is why she's so up on like what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to speak, the character you're supposed to be, and sort of thing. Whereas Jennifer Coolidge's character like thinks that speaking Cockney British is the same thing as being in Austin's time period, and they're quite polar opposites.
Yeah, like one scene that I did love was when she teaches Jane how to speak quote-unquote English.
Watch my mouth.
Blast! Blast!
Good, good.
Bloody Americans!
Bloody Americans?
You got it. You are the queen.
Really?
I do just want to throw out there that Jennifer Coolidge improvised about 90% of her lines. Mm-hmm. And none of the rest of the cast at any point ever knew what she was going to say.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you talk about this scene, I just hope people hold in their minds the fact that it's just... I feel really bad for Kerry Russell, who just had to stand there and just, like, with a straight face go forward in the scene.
So, like, there are moments like that where, like, you see her, like, think she's, like, so good at being, like, British. I feel like that actress like plays the like same character in like a lot of films.
She does,
like she's basically the same character that like she plays in Friends.
Oh, that Friends episode though, have you seen the bloopers of when they're trying to deliver one of the lines?
Oh yeah.
Oh bugger, I feel like a perfect arse.
Say it a lot. Say arse, 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 arse.
All right, yeah, you're right.
Arse.
That's not funny.
Ugh, kills me every time. My favourite Jennifer Coolidge moment in this whole film... Mm-hmm. is they're talking about something to do with, like, her complexion, and the camera's moving away from them, so you don't hear the whole... It's, like, in the background a bit. But they ask her how she keeps her complexion so good or something, and she goes...
That's because late at night when I'm all alone, I put my face in the fire.
And then And then James Callis's character in the background just goes,
like being in a kiln.
I just find it really funny.
Yeah, like when you said to me that like one of them like made up most of their lines, that was like it's definitely her.
Yeah.
like that feels like a line that like everyone there was like, oh god,
yeah,
don't laugh.
Desperately keep it together.
Yeah. My favorite of her lines was when you have Captain East come in.
Yes, Ricky Whittle.
Yeah, and like his character is some like kind of offensive captain from the Caribbean.
He's supposed to be like a pirate captain.
Yeah.
Who's from the Caribbean. I think he mentions Barbados at one time. Mm-hmm. Can't remember 100%. But so he has this very overpronounced accent, which when he is being when the character is just being his normal self backstage is not the voice that he speaks with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for context.
And then when he's like telling the story of his last adventure.
One lorn British frigate surrounded by four French warcraft. Captain dead on the deck. Surrender, Captain.
Never did I.
Did you die?
And like that's the first time in a while when like I've been like I'm gasping for air while laughing. I was like, oh my god, that's amazing.
Oh yeah. As soon as she started telling that tale, I was like, I know exactly what line he's going to say.
It was a great line. Like, she is to me the star of the film, I think. Like even though she's not the main character,
I think she really makes it.
Yeah.
I do like, this is one of those films which I watched the first time and I liked, and then I watched the second time and I liked more.
Yeah.
Because, can we just fully dive into spoiler territory?
Yes. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert.
So a brief plot synopsis is that once Jane is at Austinland, she finds out beforehand that you're supposed to be, like, assigned sort of like a romance that will lead to this. At the end of your stay, there is a ball. One of the men who is there, Henry Nobley, Jane thinks that Henry has been assigned to her, and that she's having an illicit romance with the stable boy, Martin, Brett McKenzie, he of the Flight of the Conchords. She has a bit of a dalliance with Martin, it all falls apart. Her starts to maybe feel things for Henry, blah, 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 blah. Then it's revealed, I'm really mangling this.
That's fine.
And then it's revealed to her at the end of her stay by the woman in charge that actually Martin was always supposed to be for Jane, and that Henry was too good for her and all this. So she flies off to the airport and etc.
Yeah.
My point is that when you rewatch it with this knowledge of Jane being duped, I feel like there's a lot, you start to notice the things that I didn't notice the first time I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, during Martin's seduction of Jane, he like takes her to the stable where there's this pregnant horse, and then the horse, he's like, oh, she's, I think it's happening, and he like sends her off to go get some hay.
Yeah.
And by the time she comes back with fistfuls of hay, like the horse has given birth and there's a baby horse. And I watched that for the first time, and in my brain I was like, no fucking way is a horse born that fast
and that easily.
I once watched a cow be born, and it took a lot longer, and there was a lot more contraptions involved.
And a lot more, like, arms in the cow.
Not an arm, a contraption. And I am scarred. Like, I'm not scarred mentally. Like,
yeah.
It hasn't negatively impacted me, but I, like, have a very vivid memory of the cow birth.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is some bullshit Hollywood stuff. And then at the end, it turned out to be a plot point because it was faked, because it was all part of the seduction thing.
Okay.
And there's, like, lots of smaller character interactions or, like, facial expressions and like throwaway comments, which when I watched it the second time around and I was aware of like what's actually going down, I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Like I picked up on them more, and I saw, I like it more the more that I watch it.
Okay.
Which is not always something you want from a film. Sometimes you want to just get it straight away, but
yeah,
from my viewing experience, it has aged like a fine cheese.
Okay. That's a strange way to like talk about a film, but okay.
Cheese and wine get better with time.
So do films.
Sometimes. So does Austinland.
So the film is a bit smelly?
Hey, the smelliest cheeses are the best of cheeses.
Okay.
Sometimes the cheesiest of films are the best of films.
It all ties together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back with some cheese. Apologies to any lactose intolerant listeners. I don't want to alienate the people with my metaphors.
I can't really, like, move on from this. what I was going to say. I'm not going to say that I guessed the twist from the very beginning.
But you sort of know there's got to be a twist because it's a rom-com.
I actually didn't. Oh, so, okay. Like, for the whole for the whole time, I didn't like Martin. Like, yeah. He was being, like, super forward the whole time.
Yeah.
And, like, he sort of, like, grabs her and, like, pulls her in and, like, makes out with her. And I'm like, this makes me very uncomfortable. I don't like this.
Also, their, like, make-out kisses look super awkward.
Like, it's just, like, it's so quick. And everyone is, like, throwing themselves at Jane and, like, making out with her all the time. And I'm like, I don't like any of this. This feels wrong. I don't like it. And then she has, like, a few moments with Nobly. And then, like, those are the moments that feel, like, genuine. Like, even when you don't know the kind of the twist is happening.
Yeah.
Like, when she's, like, speaking to him and you have, like, a moment when he brings her back to her room.
Yeah.
They have a whole moment in her room where, like, they kind of basically kiss. Then, like, he leaves, but then, like, turns around, like, asks to come back in, and then says to her,
"When I look at you, I feel certain of something."
And then leaves, and I'm like, ooh! That worked for me!
I love Mr. Like, there is, again, when I rewatch it with the knowledge that he is genuinely falling for her, it's even just, like, tiny bits where there's a scene where Amelia is playing the piano very, like, very bad. Well, actually, first of all, she's playing the piano, but she's just putting her hands near the piano and they're playing, a CD of someone playing the piano in the background.
Is that, like, in canon, what they're doing?
I swear that's... That happens at some point,
okay.
I swear.
Okay.
And then she finishes. And then they try and insist that Jane plays the piano. And she's like, oh, I only know one song. So they make her play it. And she plays, "It's Getting Hot in Here, So Take Off All Your Clothes." And so she's playing and singing. And everyone's, like, looking affronted.
Yeah.
And then, like, in the background, Henry's, like, bobbing his head while he's reading in, like, approval. And he's, like, grooving out to it. And it's just, like, these tiny moments which show that there's, like, a genuine, like, similarity of self happening.
Yeah.
And I live for those tiny moments.
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
like, I really like the... Again, I don't really care for Martin, as nor do you, but I do really like the sort of, like, the understated romance between Jane and Henry.
Yeah.
I think it's really nice.
I do want to say, though, with Martin, so you know how when Jane goes to his house and, like, first learns his name...
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't get his name.
Martin.
Like, I watched it back, like, 5 times.
Martin.
And I was like, I don't know what your name is.
Martin.
Is it the Kiwi accent?
I don't know what
it
is.
Are you confused?
Like, I just couldn't get it. I was just like, I don't know what you're saying.
Martin.
So, like, in my notes, I just called him, Redacted for the whole time. So I was like, I don't know what your name is.
Martin.
And then, like, at the end, she was like, and Martin. I was like, Martin. Okay, Martin.
This is like Felicia Alicia all over
again. It is.
Can we talk about, can we briefly mention that Brett McKenzie, who plays Martin, like, just, the guy has an Oscar. Congrats.
Oh, really?
Bro. Yeah, do you know?
I'm assuming not for this.
No.
Okay.
For his composing.
Oh, really?
He did the Muppets film thing.
Okay.
You know the musical one? Am I a Man or Am I a Muppet?
Which one? Like, all of them are musical.
The, you know, the Muppet film with Jason Segel in.
Okay,
Jason Segel? Yeah.
I've not seen it, but okay, yes.
Well, should you ever watch it, know that it won an Oscar and was written by Brett McKenzie.
Okay, so he's like an actor and a composer at the same time.
Yeah. Have you seen Flight of the Conchords?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should
Most of my Brett McKenzie fangirling is going to be lost on you.
Okay.
He was in The Hobbit.
Well,
as, like,
one?
A background elf.
Oh. Oh, yeah, him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, but anyway.
Okay.
Just.
Sorry.
When I saw that Brett McKenzie was in the film, I was like, oh, Brett McKenzie.
I had no clue who he was. Yeah.
There's a lot of people in this who I'm like, oh, it's like Ricky Whittle, he of the 100 and American Gods fame, who I also quite like. I was like, Ricky,
I looked him up and I was like, I vaguely like, you know, who he is, but like, I'm not sure why. And I was like, he's in Hollyoaks. He's in American Gods. And I'm like, what the hell is even happening? Who is this guy? Why is he everywhere?
I like Ricky. I think he's good. I'm calling him Ricky like we're BFFs.
Ricky.
I also love Gaius Baltar. And
who's that?
James Callis.
Who's that?
The one who Jennifer Coolidge's character.
Okay.
Have you never seen Battlestar Galactica?
I have not, no.
This is the type of thing that you should have seen at this point in your life, Mark. I can't believe this. I'm sorry. We need to pause this podcast for a second.
Why do I need to watch it?
Because you're my science fiction friend.
I don't watch that much science fiction, actually.
Oh.
Like, I don't like Star Wars. I don't really like Star Trek.
What?
I don't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I've dropped this bomb on you now.
This is like when we were in secondary school and you were like, I don't like music. And everyone was like, I'm sorry.
Are you insane? Like, it's when like I started listening to music and sort of told my friend, have you heard of Fall Out Boy? And she was like, yes.
No shit, Mark.
Yes, Mark, I've heard of Fall Out Boy. I was like, but they're amazing. You don't even know. You've not even heard of them.
Okay, well, I feel like Battlestar Galactica is something you'd like. It's okay. Occasionally, like, there are some dodgy episodes here and there.
Yeah.
But it's really great. And James Callis plays one of the main characters called Gaius Baltar.
Okay.
Who has, like, I've seen him play, like, this guy in this massively arcing plotline where he changes so much and all blah 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 blah, and it's really like a dig your teeth into the role acting type. So now when I see him in this, or for example in Bridget Jones, and he's playing like a delightful fop or a very camp gay man, then I just, every time I'm like, Gaius Baltar, what are you doing, babe? You're being so silly. And it throws me every time. Gonna put in the pin in the fact that I need to lend you all of the Battlestar Galactica DVDs that I own.
I feel like now everyone's gonna hate that I don't like Star Wars or Star Trek.
I mean, in like one fell swoop, you did just push a bunch of people.
I lost
buttons.
All of our fans.
I hate Mark. I hate Star Wars, Dixon. Just like
I like parts of Star Wars.
Which parts? Don't tell me the Jar Jar Binks parts.
Jar Jar Binks, he gets like a lot more flack than he deserves.
Ooh.
I think he's actually quite funny.
Oh, Mark!
Like, it's like super slapstick, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Like, that's the bit of Star Wars you like.
We have no fans left.
What's the bit of Star Wars that you don't like?
I don't like the acting of anyone. I don't think anyone is like a good actor in Star Wars.
In any of the three eras.
Yeah. Oh, no, okay. The seventh one is the best one, in my opinion.
Oh, God, I gotta do some counting now. Which one's the seventh one? Give me the name.
The Force Awakens.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Like, I
didn't
know
if you meant the seventh one that was released or, like, episode seven.
Yeah, episode seven.
Okay.
Like, I don't like the first three for the obvious reasons.
What's the obvious reason? Again, do we mean first three is in episode 4 to 6?
No, I mean,
or do we mean
episode
first three is in episode 1 to 3? Okay, because now I'm like, okay. At the time, I thought you were like, the obvious reasons why everyone hates the first three Star Wars films that were released and why they were a huge bomb.
No.
Okay, I'm back on it.
Okay, like, I don't like the second film because it has the whole, like, love story between, like, Anakin and Padme. And, like, it just has Anakin, like, he'll say something, like, super creepy. And then she's like, ooh, you're so sexy. I'm like, no, that was super fucking creepy.
All those years ago, not a day has gone by when I even thought of you. And now that I'm with you again, I'm in agony.
I was someone saw a Tumblr post that was like, the most unrealistic thing about Star Wars is that Padme would fall for, like, the snotty kid that she's known since he was 11, rather than the hottie that is Ewan McGregor in those films.
Yeah,
and like, I was like, yes, I understand this point.
He sort of comes back, and, like, all he does is, like, stare at her creepily, and then she's like, I find you attractive. And it's like, oh my god, shut up, Anakin, you're the worst.
Anakin, you're the worst. Why don't you like the original trilogy?
Because I don't think anyone is good at acting in them.
I also read this anecdote whereby Harrison Ford originally turned up to fix their door because he was a carpenter, and then they cast him in the film.
Yeah, like I just don't think anyone's that great.
I feel like you have to embrace it slightly.
What, like sort of kind of campy?
Yeah, like when the first film was released, it wasn't intended on being this like genre changing massive thing. It was just like, here's a film about some people in space.
Okay.
You know, and like, I feel like you've got to, well, you don't have to embrace anything. You can dislike anything you want.
Yeah.
I would like to go on record as saying that I am a Star Wars fan, so like, please don't boycott us entirely.
I'm half the podcast is a fan of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like, that's enough. Between the two of us, me and Mark like a lot of things.
Okay, we are very off topic. Okay, I have some questions for you.
Okay.
Okay, so my first question. How does this place make any money? Because, right, so they have, like, three guests. And they have, like, at least 60 staff.
Oh, yeah.
And they, like, pay rent on the house. How do they make money?
I feel like this is why it's so easy for Jennifer Coolidge to buy it at the end. Because she's probably like, very
because they're broke. Debt. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and there's the plot point of they keep having to, like, hush up the fact that the lady who owns it, husband, keeps, like, sexually assaulting people, which was, like, a subplot.
How are they still around?
Well, and also, even if you don't take into account the actual manpower, like, the sheer... I grew up in a Edwardian house.
Yeah.
That was by no means as large as this estate on the show is. But even that, like, we sold it and moved out because just, like, the maintenance of stuff like old wooden windows and like the roof tiles, like there's all this stuff like you continuously need to be working on maintaining it. If you like are living in a gigantic estate place like that person is, like, that's a shit ton of money.
Yes.
Just to maintain the physical building, let alone like any like pay for heating it, for example.
That's just like unmaintainable.
I think we just need to suspend our disbelief.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And just go with it.
But, like, it just kept getting worse, where I was just like, how are you affording this?
I love that, like, I watched this film, and I was like, oh, the Austin references. Oh, it's so funny. And you were like, this is financially irresponsible. That was, like, your takeaway.
I'll be there in a suit and just being like, so, this is very, very bad. Cut this, and then you do better. Okay, go. Bye.
Did you have any other questions?
Yes. So,
okay.
So you know the play they do.
Yeah.
So the person who owns Austinland.
Yeah.
She writes a play that the three ladies who are paying to be there and their three boyfriends, like actor boyfriends, are going to be in.
I am Aphrodite, the goddess, often fickle. In my large ass.
Largess.
Largess. I see some mortals there. Two in love, yet in despair.
I shall make everything all righty, because I am the beautiful Aphrodite.
And I don't understand the play. Can you please explain the play to me?
The play, as far as I understand it,
yes,
is supposed to be like a very bad attempt at doing some form of like almost Shakespearean tragedy type thing. So Jane and Henry is dressed like a Roman, so I assume he's like a Roman soldier of some kind. Jane is dressed like a generic person from ancient times.
Were they not Cleopatra and Mark Antony?
Potentially. It's okay. Just, you know, like, her costume was not good enough for me to be like, okay, she's definitely this.
Factually so inaccurate. Just, I don't like it.
You know, like, it could be anything.
Okay.
And, like, as far as, like, surely if it was Antony and Cleopatra, then Jane would be killing herself.
I don't really know the story that well.
With a snake.
Okay.
Jennifer Coolidge is Aphrodite at the start, coming out of a great clam shell.
Yeah.
I assumed that Amelia was supposed to be, again, like, wasn't there like a, she's just like another, like a romancy plot with someone or something? Because Aphrodite's shooting arrows.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it was like a, you know, there were loads of plays back in the day where it's like Aphrodite shoots a bunch of arrows and people fall in love, but they fall in love with the wrong one. And then it's like a bit of a laugh about who loves who and trying to get the right people to love each other. And...
Is that not the plot of Midsummer Night's Dream?
It's the plot of many things. Like, but yes, also Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
But like a lot of other stuff.
Okay.
Various people loving other people and yes.
Yeah. So like, I assumed that, like, it was, like, some butchering of, like, some famous story.
Yeah, like, what I took from it is that it wasn't highly original, and it's sort of amalgamation of a bunch of, like, other people's stuff.
Okay.
Done badly.
Okay, so you know the guy who's in, Battlestar Galactica?
Gaius Baltar, yes.
Yes.
He has a different name in this, but we're just gonna call him that.
Okay. In this play, he is dressed as some white-faced guy who looks scared a lot and like holds his hands to his face.
Yeah.
Like, what's that about? Like, it was just like, what's going on here?
What's that about? Oh god, see, this is again the moment where I have to admit that I didn't rewatch it very recently. Well, I did.
3 years ago.
No, I rewatched it for our anniversary episode. Okay. Then we didn't talk about it, and then we filmed other episodes.
Okay. How did the play not stand out to you more? Like, it was really weird.
Yeah, but, like, I had already knew it was weird. Okay. I was spending more time being like, oh, look how Jane and Henry are, like, falling for each other doing the play. Isn't it sweet?
Okay.
I mean, was he wearing wings?
Maybe. He was in white.
Yeah. Is he supposed to be, like, Cupid? Was he supposed to be a goat herder? I swear someone was supposed to be a goat herder. Oh, wait, wasn't Ricky Whittle's character, like, a hot shepherd?
I don't know.
Like, I did not pay attention to who was who in the play. I didn't think I was going to be quizzed on a who's who.
Right, 10,000 words, Sophie, about the play. Go. Analyse the play. Analyse the themes.
Can't explain the plot line of a play that was only given to us in drips and drabs.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I have failed.
Okay.
Any other questions? When you said I have questions, I was not expecting it to be like
in-depth questions. A grilling.
Well, I thought it was gonna be like, why do you like this aspect?
Okay.
What is your thought on this? But okay. No, I like that you've made such notes though.
Okay. I do have a simpler question.
Okay.
Do you have any thoughts on the scene where there is a goose / swan flying over the lake while hooting really loudly?
What?
Didn't you notice that?
I did, but like, these are the aspects that you were like, gotta ask Sophie about this.
But after our talk about the grebe, I thought that like you would like to talk about... I'm all birds.
First of all, I would like to say, how dare you compare the majestic grebe to the spawn of the devil that is geese? I am affronted. We all know that geese are awful, awful things.
Yeah.
However, I'm like, it was probably just something they included in the film.
Like, it was just like a strange moment of just like, why are we watching 30 seconds of a goose flying over a lake and hooting?
Just, you know, setting the scene. How else would you know that they were there?
Do you know where in the UK, like, it was filmed?
Austenland itself is filmed at a place called West Wickham Park,
mm-hmm.
which, unless I am talking completely out of my arse.
A perfect arse.
Yeah.
Which it's very likely that I could be, and I could be confusing it with somewhere else. But I'm fairly certain I have been to West Wickham Park as a child, and I think I'm right in saying that it is where they also filmed Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
The Keira Knightley version.
Is that, like, the updated version, or is that the original film?
The Keira Knightley is the most recent film adaptation of it. A bit old now, but...
So is that the one that's...
It's not the one with Colin Firth.
Okay.
It's not the Colin Firth one. It's the one with her and his... What's his name? Like
Hugh Grant.
No. Hugh Grant is in Bridget Jones' Diary. He is not in Pride and Prejudice.
Reese Witherspoon.
No! Again!
But wouldn't that be, like, so much better, though?
You haven't seen Pride and Prejudice. You don't know if it would be better.
Yeah, but it's, like, Keira Knightley and, like, Reese Witherspoon falling in love. No, well, I would love to watch that film.
It would be better. It's Matthew McFadden in this, actually.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Can we talk about Pride and Prejudice briefly?
Yes.
Because, like, the whole reason I watched Ostinland in the first place is because it was the, like, a point along my Pride and Prejudice journey. Because when I was in maybe, like, don't know if I was, like, 12 or mm-hmm. if I was a bit older.
Yeah.
I tried to read Pride and Prejudice. And I did not get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
I got about halfway through and I got really, really bored and I gave it back to the person who lent it to me and yeah. I spent years complaining about how utterly boring Jane Austen was.
Yeah.
And then, was it Hank? I think it was, I don't know if it was both, but the, you know, the Green brothers, John okay. and Hank Green.
Yeah.
One, if not both of them, their company thing did a web series version of Pride and Prejudice called The Lizzie Bennet Diaries, okay. where Lizzie Bennet is a film student who is doing this, like a media student, who is doing this, like, video diary thing as, like, her final project film, and then it is Pride and Prejudice set in a modern setting.
Wait, so is this, like, a story in a story? Is she real or fictional?
Oh, okay. So, John and Hank Green created a fictional YouTube channel.
Okay.
Where each week, it's like transmedia. So, okay. each week yeah. they would upload a new vlog from Lizzie and her family, which yes. are like actors and actresses.
Yeah.
But as well as doing the YouTube channel, they had Twitter accounts for all of the characters that tweeted in character.
Yeah.
And it was one of like the big, well, not like... I don't think it was, like, necessarily the first, but it was one that became quite popular quite quickly of this case of using, like, multiple media platforms to tell a fictional story.
Okay.
So that was really... I got really engrossed in that because it was released on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So different, you know, they told the story of Pride and Prejudice, but as well as having, obviously, Lizzie's point of view in these video diaries, characters who didn't get... much of a focus in the original book, like Lydia. Lydia then had her own YouTube channel, and there was a like arcing plotline where you had to be subscribed to both of them to be able to tell what was going on.
Okay,
and
cool.
stuff like it was really cool, and I got really into it, like too into it.
Yeah,
and I was like, you know, like you get a bit too addicted to something, and then when they upload it, you're like, I have to watch it immediately. Nothing else matters.
Yeah,
it was super great, and okay. I loved it. And at the end of that. I was like, this is ridiculous. I've been telling people for years that I hate Jane Austen, and yet this thing, which admittedly is an adaptation, but at its core is her work,
yeah.
I thoroughly loved. I had, like, you know, fully addicted to it. So I thought to myself, Sophie, it's about time you read the bloody book again, isn't it? And I did, and I loved it. So I really liked that. And then I have now worked my way through watching both, like, film versions of it and then other adaptations. Like, there was one that was, like, Becoming Austen, where someone gets, like, sent back in time to Jane Austen's time and stuff like this, which people don't really like, but it was fine. And mm-hmm. So then as part of that, this is such a long ramble, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine.
But, like, at the end of all of this was when I heard that this film was coming out. And I thought to myself, screw it. I will continue my Jane Austen Pride and Prejudice journey even more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably has something to do with me enjoying it, is that I have, like, this just sheer interest now in Pride and Prejudice adaptations. And although this is, you know, it's not a direct adaptation, you could say that there are, like, you know, they've very consciously not just drawn on the setting, but there are, like, elements of that story still in this.
I was about to ask if this was, like, a Jane Austen book.
This is not a Jane Austen book.
Well, not, like, directly, but, like, a...
Well, I haven't read any other of her books, although I have them to read.
Mm-hmm.
I am familiar with a number of them through either film or, like, the same company that did the Lizzie Bennet Diaries also did a Emma version as well. That's one of her novels, Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Is Emma the one about the poor person whose family is, like, super mean to her?
That could be so many novels. It's the one about, like you've described, like, so many Victorian novels. Just
okay, and,
like,
true.
Jane Austen is not Victorian, but, okay. Like, there's a whole, like, you know, literature is made of poor people whose families are mean.
Like, I feel like I'm saying, like, so many, like, vague things to you today. Like, so that one with the guy who meets that girl and they fall in love, you know that one?
Emma is, like, she tries to matchmake all of her friends and then, like... suddenly realizes she's in love with blah and all stuff. Again, haven't read the book, only seen film and thingy. I would say that you could... I kind of want to say that there are, like, Pride and Prejudice plot elements, especially mm-hmm. in, like, the... In Pride and Prejudice, Lizzie Bennet is initially attracted to George Wickham.
Yeah.
And hates Mr. Darcy. Well, not like they have, like, a fundamental clash of personalities, so she, like, detests him. And mm-hmm. George Wickham tells her all this stuff about how he cheated him out of his inheritance and blah, 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 and tells her that Mr. Darcy's a very awful person. And then later it turns out that actually George Wickham's a bit of a shit, and he runs away with Lizzie's sister, and so they have to get married because it's the only way to save her reputation. And it turns out Mr. Darcy's a thoroughly nice guy who just doesn't have a lot of great social skills, and that George Wickham royally fucked him over in the past and all this stuff. And you can see how there's a similarity of
Jane
initially falling for Martin, and then it's all turned out to be a complete, you know, lie, and it turns out that actually this guy who she thought was an actor is the one who truly cares for her, and there's more to him. Or not even that there's more to him, it's just that the him he was presenting is his authentic self.
Yeah.
So, like, there's, like, that plot aspect, which I'd say, like, whilst not a direct adaptation, you can definitely read that narrative into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's sort of, like, my main takeaway.
Okay.
If anyone who's listening is more familiar with other Austen works and would like to draw some more comparisons between plot elements and her other books, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about all I've got.
Okay. That does make me think of what I think was the best part of the film.
Okay.
So I think the film was best in the last moments when she's having that conversation with Nobly about, like, what's real and what's fiction.
Yeah, I love that.
And, like, I feel like that would have been, the film would have been better served if that had been, like, more of a plot from the beginning. Like, I'm not sure if I just, like, didn't think of it that way. Like, that may have been, like, a plot from the beginning.
I think it's kind of present, because I think from the beginning she's trying to escape who she is through this fictional world, because she's not happy with her life.
Yeah.
And then I think her being at Austen Land is, first of all, her, like, you know, she's gone in with expectations that are not met, and then she almost overcompensates for it by being someone else who maybe... is her being super confident, but it's not like her authentic self again.
Yeah.
And it's only really at the end that she journeys towards giving less fucks, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This point didn't go anywhere, I'm sorry.
No, like, I do see that. Like, I do like the idea of the film, like, dealing with her trying to escape from, like, what she sees as, like, a mundane life.
Yeah.
So, like, I feel like we had this conversation with, like, Ordinary Days as well. Like, I can really, like, sink my teeth up into a story where they're discussing, like, both the benefits and the drawbacks of, like, escaping into fantasy.
Yeah.
And how ultimately, like, you do have to start, like, finding a balance. So, like, when Nobly, like, comes to find her at the end.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the message isn't, like, fantasy is bad. It's that like, you have to, like, take it in moderation. Because she's all, like, this kind of thing doesn't happen in real life. And then, like, she gets, like, drawn into him. Like, and, like, drawn into the moment. So, like, I do enjoy things where, like, it doesn't just, like, come hard down either way of, like, be realistic or see everything through, like, rose-coloured glasses.
Yeah.
Like, it's good to have, like, a combination of both.
Yeah. Which, I don't know if you're saying that this does, but I think it does.
I think it does in the end. I just, like, don't think it goes far enough with it.
Because I quite like that when she's in the fantasy world, it's the things about her reality that make her have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's very much, like, the fuck it moment when she steals the pretty dresses and she just goes off and has a whale of a time while she's there.
Yeah.
And I quite liked that aspect of it because, I don't know, I liked having a narrative where it was she sort of didn't change herself because she liked a guy. She went to a situation and in the situation realized that actually these are the things. She, like, found herself in a situation and then got, like, ended up with a nice guy at the end of it all, rather than, like, she tried to change herself for the guy.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Because that's one of my big niggles with rom-coms, is I watch a lot of rom-coms and I just feel like there's too much of a woman giving up who she is in order to have a relationship which she thinks will fulfill her, whereas I just want, like, some cool people to be cool people and then end up, like, kissing at the end of it.
Yeah.
I'm a simple girl.
Like, you do normally have, like, in a rom-com, like, you have, like, one of them is one extreme, one's the other, and they, like, meet in the middle and, like, both compromise at the end.
Whereas they didn't really change who they were.
No.
They just realised that they liked being with each other. And that's kind of what I want more of.
Yeah, like, it was, like, a story, like, about them finding each other.
And even, like typical, like, rom-com clichés. Like, she technically has a makeover because they steal a load of dresses, but she's not having a makeover and then, like, suddenly she gets the popular guy. She just has a makeover and then flirts shamelessly with everyone before, like, carrying on and having a merry old time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't think it's the most, like, I'm not going to be like, this film deserves an Oscar for storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think it's fun. And this is why I feel like this episode is a bit of a shambles on my front. And I feel like I haven't, like, provided enough structure. Because mostly my structure is, it's just a bit of a laugh.
I had fun. Did you have fun? We had fun.
It's just, I could just sit here and I could just tell you, list you the moments that made me laugh. And that would be a very boring podcast. But it's just why I like it.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it's kind of... I also realised that I haven't mentioned one of my favourite bits in this.
Yep.
Which is so tiny. And it's just the entire scene. There's a rule at Austin Land where you're not allowed to have modern contraptions, aka phones.
Yeah.
And the horrible lady in charge whacks out Jane's phone and is like, I'm sorry, Miss Erstwhile, but you are banished, essentially. And then Amelia is all like, oh, she, like, takes the fall. And because she's such a recurring client, the woman in charge is like, oh, it's absolutely fine. Like, we will not speak of it. And then it turns out that Amelia wants to, like, blackmail Jane into letting Amelia get with Ricky Whittle's character.
Yeah.
And just the entire scene, she is at her most gallopy. Like, you see the way she physically moves. She, like, almost, like, hops back and forth with her little arms up. She just reminds me of a pony, like, doing dressage. And there's just a moment where she just refers to them as,
now that we are bosom sisters, I can at last confide in someone.
And I just find it really funny. Both the phrase bosom sisters and the way she actually says it. I'm really concerned because Mark isn't replying.
Hello?
No. Can you... Okay, can you... I can hear you now.
Yeah, okay.
I was like... finished my anecdote, and then there was this very long pause, and I was like,
I did start talking, okay.
I was either, you just don't find this funny, or something's gone wrong.
Can you imagine if I was just like, no, no.
If you were just like, personally, I don't find the idea of bosom sisters very amusing at all. And there's me, like, losing my shit. And you're just like, nope.
I was saying.
Star Wars all over again.
Oh, wow. Wow. Every time now you'd be like, Mark, it's not Star Wars, calm down.
Like, I understand why people don't like Star Wars. I feel like my entire life I'd thought that you did.
Like, that's because I've got Star Wars socks and Star Wars shoes.
That is my point! Why do you have these things?
Because I like Star Wars as, like, an abstract idea, and then I consume it, and then I'm like, I don't like this. Okay, never mind.
That's the most ridiculous thing you've ever said to me. You're like those people who wear t-shirts of bands that they've never listened to.
I know.
You're like, I just like the aesthetic, which is fine. But it's just because I know that you have these items that it has always just been part of my world that you like Star Wars.
I think I want to like it. So, like, I sort of give off, like, an air of, like, trying to like it. So, like, it seems like I do, but I'm like, please like it. I want to. I really want to like it because everyone loves it, and I'm just like, I don't really like it very much. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I feel like a bad nerd. I'm sorry.
No, it's perfectly, like, I'm all about you do you, boo. You like what you like. Don't waste time with stuff you don't. It's just, like, something I thought was real that is not. I just have to deal with it.
Everything's a lie.
Everything's a lie. Yeah. This is, well, you know, like, when I messaged you and I was like, my dad wore a Star Wars tie at his wedding. Yeah. I thought that was a piece of information you'd really value. And
I
realise it's not.
Oh, no. I did like the message. I did like the message.
Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't like, oh, my God, I don't care, Sophie. You go.
I care nothing for this information. Anyway.
Yeah, I was saying, in this scene where she's calling them bosom sisters.
Yeah.
Like, she's doing this, like, combination of, like, a really, like, bad fake accent.
Yes.
And, like, really bad fake crying. She's like, we are bosom sisters!
And there's, like, a head wobble that accompanies it. And, like, it's the sheer physicality of how this woman has acted this entire character.
Dear Jane, now that we are bosom sisters, I can at last confide in someone. George East and I became engaged. It is true. But alas, he was a poor sailor. And my father broke off the engagement without my assent.
And again, if you haven't seen the film, right at the end, well, near the end, when Jane has got in the cart to go back to the airport to go home, Amelia slips into this American accent, and it's revealed that that's not her accent at all. She's not British. She just comes here every year because her husband's really old and she has nothing else to do.
Like, I feel like this film was made for, like, Americans, because I was like, I know she's not English. Like, that was a terrible accent the whole time.
But that's what I find funny, because the whole time you're watching it, you just think, this woman is doing a terrible accent.
Yeah.
And then right at the end, it's revealed that that's the whole point. Like, she is doing a terrible accent. It's not just they've hired someone and they don't realise that they've hired someone with a terrible accent.
Yeah,
it's that the whole thing is a complete charade, like the entire estate.
That's true.
I just find it funny. Bosom sister.
There's one detail that, like, probably should have brought up earlier.
Okay.
But the soundtrack of this film is very strange. So, like, right at the very start, like, you have, like, a cover of, like, And I was like, when was this film released? 'Cause, like,
2013.
I know, but, like, that's, like, a very old song.
Oh, no, it's classic chick flick move.
Is it?
Classic chick flick move. You deliberately use these songs that are a bit cheesy and dated because you're creating the chick flick cheesy mood.
Okay.
It's like Bridget Jones's soundtrack. Killer soundtrack.
Yeah.
But it is, not a lot of it is contemporary.
Okay.
You know, like, it's this, or rather, this is almost hearkening back to that Bridget Jones feel, because Bridget Jones is like a revisioning of Pride and Prejudice. That's why he's called Mr. Darcy, and it's Colin Firth who played Mr. Darcy in the film.
I've never seen Bridget Jones.
Oh my god, Mark!
Everything's coming out of this episode.
Everything! Yeah. We need to... Next time I come up and visit you, I'm going to bring some DVDs. I just...
Just hours and hours. Your sort of whole suitcase will be like, only DVDs.
Like, it's my own fault. My parents raised me by making... Like, we watched a lot of stuff. And yeah. Now I just assume that there are just certain things which I just assume the entire world has seen.
Yeah.
And Bridget Jones' Diary, one of those things. I just assume that at some point in everyone's life it's been like on in the background at Christmas or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like, I spent like a lot of time... My parents like didn't give me any kind of like film or music education. And I just sat there and watched High School Musical over and over again. So like
I think I just assumed that Amy would have watched it sometime and you might have been there.
For context, Amy is my sister. Like, I spent like a lot of time in the mindset of like, this film is for girls, not for me.
But you loved High School Musical, Mark.
I had a strange mindset.
You were not the... Like, if we're gonna go for, like, this film was for girls, therefore I can't watch it. Like, High School Musical was not necessarily your go-to
Are
option
you calling me not macho, Sophie?
I'm saying that if you were mentally rejecting the feminine,
yeah,
then maybe going for High School Musical as your film of choice was not the most stereotypical move you could have done.
It really wasn't.
No.
Yeah.
Well, Bridget Jones' Diary is a contemporary revisioning of Pride and Prejudice. And I think because that is such like an iconic thing in the chick flick sphere,
mm-hmm.
and because this film is doing a very similar thing, I would think that the soundtrack being slightly dated and cheesy, not like, I personally think it's all quality,
okay.
but I would think that it is potentially drawing on that aspect of maybe tapping into Bridget Jones. Could be wrong. They could have just been like, fuck it, we like this music.
Okay. But
I just think a real, like, we talked about this with Drive Me Crazy. I think a really good chick flick has to have a really good soundtrack.
Okay, yeah. I see that. Oh, I do have one final thought.
Okay.
Okay, so the main character, Jane.
Yeah.
When she gets there, like you mentioned, they each get their pseudonyms.
Yes.
Jane is given the name of Miss Erstwhile.
Yes.
Like, that feels, like, poignant to me, but I can't quite place why.
I mean, erstwhile just means, like formally, you know, like, our erstwhile companions.
Okay.
I think... Okay, well, you could, if we're gonna, like, go into, like, metaphorical readings...
Yeah.
...take it as a comment on her obsession with the past and her inability to live in the present and embrace her own life because she's too caught up in the life of fictional characters
mm-hmm.
from a time long gone.
Yeah.
You could also just contrast it with, like, you know, the other ones are called Miss Charming and Miss Heartwright, and then, well, Lady Heartwright, and then Miss Erstwhile, in comparison, is just a bit boring.
Okay.
You know, like they've, you know, it's much more plain and, but almost, also, like, much more honest.
Okay.
You know, I think it's probably, like, a nod to this occupation with the past. And by the end of the film, she rejects the name Miss Erstwhile and she's just Jane and she, like, embraces her life rather than even going back to how she was before she was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the best that my English lit degree can give us.
I feel like Metz of Alzebo Soup would like that, like, name analysis.
Well, me just, like, reading far too much into, like, a name. But, like, I think the names in this are partially significant. You know, like, she's Jane, like, Jane Austen, Jane.
Yeah.
You know, I think you can read into some of them.
Yep.
And that's all I'll say on the matter. I defend myself.
Do you know the origin of the name Erstwhile, Sophie? Have you done? No?
I haven't Googled erstwhile origin. Give us a gist. Erstwhile. Okay. It has been part of the English language since the 16th century,
mm-hmm.
according to Merriam-Webster.
Okay.
Formed from two words that are much older, comes from the Old English words, I assume, meaning early, and while, which has much the same meaning as the modern while.
While?
So it's like, okay, so the first bit is like meaning like before while, essentially.
Okay.
You're like early while.
We kind of reached a dead end.
Yeah.
Yep.
You asked. I provided.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Good stuff. We're all much enriched.
I feel like all podcasts should like end with like a very far too in-depth like name analysis that goes nowhere.
Like, it's probably the most like analytical I've gone this entire episode.
Yeah.
I feel like I've just spent most of the episode being like blah blah blah, but it's fucking funny.
I laughed.
I laughed at this bit, and then I laughed at this bit. If you'd like to join the discussion, do feel free to tell me what rom-coms you find thoroughly entertaining and funny, because I would appreciate that. Just putting the call out there. By you, I mean our listeners,
not you,
Mark, because we've established that you've seen no films ever.
It's a bit extreme.
I mean, that's what I've taken from this. Yeah. Like, all of like the things that I thought you'd seen, you haven't.
Like, I've seen a lot of the same films over and over again.
I'm like, I've seen films. I've seen a lot of films.
I think I've seen about like 10 films, but like I'm over and over and over again.
Oh, you're in double digits.
I know, I'm getting there.
God, you can't be tamed.
This paints me in like a really bad light. Like, I watch like a lot of new films. I just don't watch like a lot of old films.
No, like, and again, I will reiterate, this is light jesting, you know.
Shame, shame, shame.
Shame, shame, shame.
You can watch what you want. You can consume as much or as little of stuff as you want. Live your own dreams. However, I just assume the entire world has seen Bridget Jones's Diary, and it deeply shocks me.
Like, I've also not seen Alien.
We should watch the first Alien together sometime. Like, how much do you know about it? Obviously, you know what the aliens are. I get
yeah.
That.
Yeah, like, but, I know the rough story.
My favorite watching Alien film memory is that I was over my friend's house as like maybe like 13, and like they've got some family friends over, and I've got this guy sat next to me, is 6-foot-tall, chunky prison guard.
Yeah.
And Rose's dad, whilst we were watching one of the really tense scenes, had snuck outside, and then during the tense scene, the window was open, and he jumped his head through the window and just like yelled like rah, and the prison guard next to me absolutely lost his shit, and it was hilarious. I like also jumped, obviously.
Yeah.
It was just like this massive chunky guy next to me just like let out a scream, and that's just great. Anyway, yeah, we should watch Alien. I'd love to be there the first time you watch Alien, actually.
Are we gonna watch all of them, like all like 6 or 7 of them, or
I mean, you could probably skip out some of them because they're a bit shit.
Yeah.
But like Alien the original, for
okay
sure.
Okay.
We could probably do Alien 1 and 2. 3's the one that's a bit dodge.
So which one is the one where they go to the planet? Is that Aliens?
A lot of them involve...
Am I doing that vague thing again?
Yeah, like, which one of these films set in space, which involves people flying around in spaceships, involves them going to another planet? Oh, have you seen... I'm so sorry, we've gone off on a tangent. Have you seen Pitch Black?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, we should watch that one as well.
Like, that's I feel like a... we should have, like, a space themed.
You just mentioned, like, aliens and a planet and yeah. Pitch Black. I was immediately there. We should, we should have another.
Now we're just making plans.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be great. If anyone has any suggestions for any other, like, iconic, spacey, alien-y films that we should watch. Also, just send us all of your suggestions for things to watch always. That's my gist. Rom-coms, alien sci-fi, it's all good.
I like that our podcast about this one film has like turned into us just like just making plans.
I love it. Can't say we're not versatile.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about chick flicks. We talk about sci-fi. Ooh, maybe there's a sci-fi chick flick out there that's my dream film.
That one called Passengers is some...
No.
Is that not like a rom-com? I always
thought
that's
hella fucked up.
Okay.
Chris Pratt's character is not a nice person.
Okay.
That's like if you switched the perspectives of that film, it would be fucking creepy.
Okay.
I won't go into the plot detail because I will spoil it for everyone, but yeah. It's fucked up.
Okay.
This is my point, though. I just want an unproblematic story with people falling in love, maybe set in space. Is that so much to ask?
Campaign.
Like a healthy relationship, which no one's coerced into anything, okay. And doesn't have to be straight. I'd like a bit of variety in my romances. That would be stellar.
Yeah.
And if no one could die, that would, like, really be the icing on the cake.
Okay.
These are my film requirements. Give me space love stories, please.
You can read Saga.
Oh, my friend at work is going to lend them to me.
Yeah. Like, Saga's kind of like a space romance opera.
I'm in. I mean, really, what I'm asking for is that I just need to rewatch Farscape.
Okay.
Because nothing has ever made me happier.
Okay.
Like, no space story has ever, like, really got me... I say happier, that's not the right word to use. Like, sometimes they rip out my still-beating heart.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, if I want epic space opera love story, Farscape is where I go.
Okay. Okay.
You should watch Farscape.
I've still got season one to watch. Like, you gave it to me on DVD.
Could I have that back if you're not going to watch it?
I think you bought it for me.
Did I?
Yeah.
I'll check with my dad. Just make sure I haven't...
I've still got Angel. That's what I've got.
I really should take Angel back off of you if you're not going to watch it. Because I should return it.
You should.
Yeah.
I can bring it back. Like, now we are just making plans again.
We are. I'm so sorry. Okay. Shall we do our end record?
Yes.
Right. Yes. Sorry. I just keep... like, now that I know how little you've seen, I'm just very excited to just, like, embark on a journey.
Like, I feel like a lot of our film sessions have been me... Like showing you shit films.
Yeah, now I'm going to show you some quality.
Yeah.
At the end of each episode, we each assign a number of flailings to the thing that we've been discussing. You can see our ranked number of flailings list over on mightyville.com and a companion post to go along with this episode. How many flailings do you give Austin Land?
Me?
You, yes. No, the other person on this podcast that I'm talking to. We do the exact same patter every time. How are you confused?
Because we've spent the past, like, half hour making plans in real life to watch films. Like, I'm a bit off track. I think I would give it 3.5 flailings.
That's fair.
Because, like, there were moments... where, like, I laughed, and, like, it's, like, definitely better than Troy. Like,
oh,
Troy
yeah.
is
like,
still,
Troy
like,
is
far
the
down
real
there.
Benchmark.
Yeah. Troy has, like, 5 stars on most things.
Oh, dear.
It's ridiculous.
Please tell me that's out of 10.
Nope, out of 5.
Fuck off.
I know! Like, that film was a pile of shit.
Right there.
yeah, so, like, this film I liked more than Troy.
My real question for you...
Yeah.
Is how does it compare to Drive Me Crazy? Because these are the two crap chick flicks that I've made you watch for this podcast.
I did like it more.
Woo! That was my main aim.
Yeah.
I'm slowly going to just eventually work up to recommending some actually good stuff. And you just got to really wade through it until
okay.
that point.
Okay. How about you?
Like a 7.
Okay.
Because, like, I like it more every time I watch it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like the epitome of cinematic storytelling.
Yeah.
But it tickles me.
Okay.
I find it damn funny. I like the characters in it. Mm-hmm. I find it amusing. It's got a nice variety of women in it. And I root for the love story.
Okay. Cool.
I like it more now that I know that I'm supposed to think that Martin's a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the first time I was watching it, I was like, really not into this bit of it.
No.
I've never really found JJ Field attractive apart from in this film.
Okay.
Like, I mean, nothing against him. Perfectly nice looking man.
Now we've lost like, even more fans. And...
No, like, he's a perfectly nice looking man. It's just, it's when he's playing this character in this film that I find myself being like, oh, hello. Okay. And that's the end of this episode of You Know What I Like. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the show, and we'd love to be able to flail at more people.
We hope that you've enjoyed listening to us ramble, and please follow the podcast on Twitter at YKWILpodcast, or drop us an email at ykwilpodcast@gmail.com. There's also a monthly post that goes up over on mightyville.com and ykwilpodcast.com. So check over there to see that.
Come back next month when we get overly excited about Riverdale.
See you then.